Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're going to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty well.
As am I. First of all, December is over.
Yes. life is returning to normal. It's the sun shines again. I get to actually see the daylight.
And your children.
And my children, yes, exactly.
For those of you not in the restaurant business, December is quite a busy month, and we opened a new restaurant in November, so we've been busy since February. I was watching Springer the other day.
Why were you watching Springer?
Because it's the dumbest thing I could think of to do, and I didn't have to think at all.
Because I needed something really banal to do for an hour.
And I stayed in my pajamas all day. And I ate a pint of Häagen-Dazs vanilla ice cream. And then you know what else I did? Nothing.
Yeah, ordered a pizza.
Exactly.
Said, please deliver, I'm not leaving.
But we're back to work now, and what a way to start off the new year. You know, Mark and I try not to talk too much about our own restaurants in a self-aggrandizing way on the show, but we
can't help him.
Well, I can't help this one. The Star Ledger, for those of you listening outside New Jersey, the Star Ledger is the largest circulation daily paper in New Jersey, and it's a darn good paper, and they have a great restaurant reviewer named Cody Kendall, and she's one of the most important reviews in this state. And she came out to our new restaurant, Catherine Lombardi. She must have been there in early January by the looks of things. And she reviewed the restaurant and gave us 3.5 out of 4 stars.
Very
nice. Which is pretty good.
It was really nice. Especially, you know, you're always happy to get a review like that. But when you've only been open 7 or 8 weeks and you know that you're still tinkering and working all the bugs out, so it's really nice to get a review like that.
Well, you know, and the funny thing is about reviews, and this is an interesting thing for me and Mark, because most of the restaurants that we consult on, and our own restaurant, we're shooting to be in the top, contemporary American restaurants, French restaurants, even Italian, you know, Alta Cucina restaurants, which we haven't consulted on before, but those sorts of restaurants, you're always looking for 4 stars. What we were looking for in Catherine Lombardi is sometimes you're not looking for that. There's no way that the veal parmesan restaurant and chicken parmesan restaurant is going to get 4 stars. It's just a different category of restaurant.
Right.
We're thrilled with the review.
Exactly. We want it to be the best at this particular thing, but 3.5 stars is to us was a perfect review. You know, I look back years and years ago, the New York Times reviewed what I regard as the best hot dog stand in the world. Okay, a place called Rutt's Hut.
Oh, yeah.
And they gave it 2 stars. And I thought, that is the best hot dog stand in the world.
Yeah, 1 star is really helpful.
But you know what?
You know.
It's perfect. It's the perfect hot dog stand. It looks kind of dirty.
Yeah.
It's the guys are a little gruff behind the counter. The hot dogs come hot out of the fryer and are sizzling and crackling as they come out.
It's a place called Rutt's Hut on Route 46. I think it's in Totowa.
It's actually just off of Route 21 in Clifton. But very good, Francis. Way to have your details
there. I got them in the right county. But in any event, what I love about that place is it's a stainless steel dive of a place, and everybody from North Jersey knows exactly where it is, and they fry the hot dogs. So they rip down the side, and they do the short order cook thing. So you go in and you order two hot dogs and an orange soda. And somebody screams into a microphone, 2 rippers and a howdy.
Yeah,
I don't even like orange soda. I go in just because I want to hear that, and then I give it away. Let me talk about the review.
Yeah, but I just want to say how about reviews in the restaurant business. It's a really unusual business. And the restaurant business, you've heard us talk about all the challenges that the restaurant business has. The restaurant business has so many other hurdles to overcome that a lot of other restaurants that aren't retailing and manufacturing don't have.
Mm-hmm.
But one advantage the restaurant business has is that we have these great reviews. We have this vehicle in which to get an unbiased word out to the clientele. And I don't know of any other business really, you know, save theater and records where I was going, where you have that, where someone will come to your establishment and either give you or not give you, based on their experience in your place, an endorsement.
Well, and the whether it's a good review or a bad review, there's that old adage of, you know, as long as they spell your name right, mm-hmm. which is really important. And what's interesting, what we found over the years, I mean, Stage Left has been around for 14 years, and for 14 years we've never gotten a bad review. Mm-hmm. And we've often been named in the top three restaurants. People have said we're the best restaurant in the state.
It's funny because this is a great review, and it's 3.5 stars, and it's actually the worst review we've ever gotten from the Ledger.
Right.
Stars.
Right. But the thing about it is, what's interesting in a restaurant, as you get more longevity, each individual review matters less. But if no one knows who you are, the phone's been ringing off the hook.
That's true. This review came
out on Sunday. Today is Tuesday. And this the phone's been ringing off the hook. Because it's a new restaurant, it doesn't have a track record. You know, I mean, Stage Left gets another 4-star review from the Ledger. You know, it's like, you know, Elvis is still dead.
Right.
You know,
we've seen that 7 times. Right.
Big deal. But this is great. And but what's interesting about the review is it says a lot of positive things, and I think it gets a few things right. We're going to engage for just a moment or two and let you know what Cody Kendall, the Star Ledger, had to say about our new restaurant, Catherine Lombardi. She gave us 3.5 stars, not a negative word in the review, and she said the traditional Sunday dinners once prepared by Mark Pascal's grandmother, Catherine Lombardi, are recreated with flair every night at the new restaurant bearing her name. From macaroni with gravy at $18.95 to osso buco at $26.95, it's far from standard issue. The meals are simple and effective, the kind of food you grew up with, and in a state with a great Italian heritage, there are a lot of other people who fondly remember leisurely Sunday dinners replete with rib-sticking ziti, sweet sausage, and creamy polenta. The stalwart cuisine has taste, virtue, and the kinds of qualities that always saw Catherine Lombardi's relatives through the week. The mozzarella is fresh, the desserts are great, blah, 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 blah. And it ends with saying that, this had to make you cry, Mark. The review ends saying, Grandma would approve. That'd be your grandma.
Yeah, that would be my grandma.
That's pretty cool.
It did. Made me feel great.
That's really cool.
You know,
cool.
You build a restaurant like this, and you put your heart and soul into it. And even people who aren't building great restaurants sometimes are putting their heart and soul into it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so you're never really 100% sure that, you know, people are going to get it.
Yeah.
People are going to understand what the goal was, what the purpose was, why you're doing these kinds of things. You know, the little kitschy things we put in on the menu, like the black meatballs and
right. You call it macaroni, not
pasta.
Right,
you call it macaroni, you call it gravy. The little things that my family did that were different. And I guess I need to tell everybody what black meatballs are now.
Yeah, would you?
Okay, yeah. Black meatballs are what my family would do on Sunday, and a lot of Italians have come and told me how much they enjoy seeing the black meatballs on there. If you got to Grandma's house early enough on Sunday afternoon, the meatballs would still be in the frying pan before they ever went into the gravy. And what would happen is you if you could get to the frying pan, you could sneak one of those little meatballs out of the frying pan before Grandma tossed them into the gravy. And they're just a different entity, because what happens is meatballs will let some of their flavor into the gravy, and some of the gravy will be absorbed into the meatball.
Right.
And so the black meatball, the one that's never touched the gravy, is a different entity.
To me, I think of the black meatball as a little round Italian garlic-laden hamburger.
Yeah, that's it. Right on the money. And they're delicious, but they're definitely their own thing. And they're crunchy on the outside. And they were my favorites. And the rule was, you can have one, not two.
Because then there wouldn't be enough red meatball.
The second time, you get a little swat with the spatula on your hand as you were reaching for the meatball.
Well, here's a shameless plug. If you want to come to Catherine Lombardi's, you can have black meatballs with reckless abandon. Just pay us. We won't swat your hand. We'll bring you as many as you like. And I think that one of the great things about opening a restaurant like this, because, I mean, I grew up going over friends' houses and having this kind of food, and I think if you're from New Jersey, you have exposure to this kind of food. But this is it done really well, and it's unfortunate there aren't more restaurants doing this kind of food, you know, with the care that we're taking.
Well, I feel really good in this restaurant. It's a place where I feel good, and you know, you can see my heritage.
Well, and many thanks to Cody Kendall who got the joke, you know, so that's really great. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And we have a guest joining us for the rest of the show. Michael Rollman is one of our favorite authors. He's written for the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, Gourmet and Food Arts magazines. Among his many books on various subjects, there are several on food and cooking. The Making of a Chef was written out of his experiences at the Culinary Institute of America. The Soul of a Chef was his perspective on the Certified Master Chef exam and three top chefs who took it. The Reach of a Chef is due out in May 2006. But the book we're going to be talking mostly about today is this fabulous and beautiful book called Charcuterie, The Craft of Salting, Smoking, and Curing, written with Brian Paulson, and it's been called one of the most intriguing and important cookbooks to be published this year. Hi, Michael. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
Hey, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hey, happy to be here.
Can I just share with you my perspective on this cookbook?
It's your show. You can do whatever you want.
I do have the microphone button at my fingertips, so I guess I can. What I love about this is I'm just going to read from a review. It's an arsenal of recipes that take hours and sometimes days to prepare, loaded with fat, and if ill prepared, can lead to botulism. You're sort of the anti-Rachel Ray, aren't you?
Well, if you continue reading on, they would say it's the most unlikely sort of cookbook there is for that very reason.
Well, yeah.
Well, especially in this day and age where everybody wants the 15-minute meal or the 30-minute meal, as it were.
This is not the quick, you know, meal in 15 minutes. Whatever prompted you, and by the way, and I love charcuterie. Love charcuterie. And to make charcuterie is almost a religious experience, but it takes a commitment of time.
So I guess the first thing we need to tell everybody is, Michael, what is charcuterie?
Charcuterie, we know charcuterie in the form of cold cuts in this country, bologna, salami, that kind of thing. And charcuterie in France is a store you'll walk into and see all the sausages hanging, and you'll see pâtés lined up in the case. It's all the stuff that we preserve, that we cook and preserve. Dry-cured sausages, or we cook a pâté, and we can eat a pâté all week. We cure a ham. It used to refer to the pork butcher back in the Middle Ages who would cut up and cook the pork for sale because raw pork was illegal to sell.
So why did we start making charcuterie? How in history did this happen?
Why we started making it was to preserve it. Charcuterie began before we had refrigeration. And so we had tons of meat. We had to figure out how, once we slaughtered an animal, how to preserve the food. And we did that by drying it, and we did that by salting it, and we did that by cooking it. And that became the art of charcuterie. Why do we continue to do this? Well, when we have easy refrigeration and freezing, we do it because it tastes so good.
You know, that's mine and Francis's best reason for almost everything we do.
I have to tell you, Michael, we opened this restaurant and I spent a little time in Spain, and there's a tradition in Spain around the holidays. People buy a ham, which is basically, for those of you who are squeamish out there, it's a leg of pig, usually. And you buy hams in Spain often with the hoof on, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
we'll show you what kind of pig it came from.
Exactly. Well, people don't want to see the hoofs. They want to see it in America. They want to see it in a package.
They want to see it in an extruded plastic package and sliced thin.
But when you would go to Spain around the holidays, they would take a jamón serrano or jamón ibérico, you know, very expensive ham, and leave it out at room temperature, another thing Americans are very afraid of, like for days. And every time, and leave it on the kitchen table in a special ham holder.
For days? Well, it's left out for years.
Right,
exactly. But, I mean, it's left out on the table, and you would just, every time you'd pass by the kitchen, you'd cut yourself a little piece of ham and snack on it like we go for Fritos.
It's beautiful, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's truly, truly wonderful.
Well, we use prosciutto di Parma in this new restaurant that we have because it's an Italian-American restaurant, and it's out on the Burkel slicer, the hand slicer, all day.
Uh-huh.
I can't pass that thing without cutting myself
a piece
of ham.
It's the worst thing for my diet in the whole wide world.
And it makes a difference when you cut it. It's best when you just cut it.
It makes
a difference to be sliced at the moment of or just before consuming it.
There's no question, and that's, you know, as a consumer, you go home and if you want to bring a pound of prosciutto home, you have to get it sliced in advance, and hopefully somebody's laying it out on wax paper and being very, very
and
delicate
you gotta eat it that day.
With it. But it's otherwise it starts to dry out, and when it's sliced perfectly thin like that, it dries out very, very quickly. So
you know, there's that old phrase, the best, you know, best invention since white bread, since sliced bread. Sliced bread wasn't such a great invention. Buy the thing whole, cut the bread as you need it.
Not sliced bread was the best invention since sliced bread.
So now let me ask you a question. Now, is any sort of preserved meat considered charcuterie? Like, is beef jerky charcuterie?
It can be considered that today. Charcuterie is sort of technically reserved for used to be reserved for pork products, but today in America, in our broadened use of the term charcuterie, it can refer to anything from vegetable rillettes to even the condiments that go with it. So yes, beef jerky, which is dried, very lean dried beef, is a form of charcuterie.
Well, when we come back from the break, we're going to ask Michael. Michael Rollman is our guest. He is a writer, and he's written this amazing book called Charcuterie, which you should pick up, even if you're not going to do it, just to see how dry cured meats are made. It's fascinating. And when we come back, we're going to talk to you about what kind of lengths people go to and what kind of things you need to do if you really want to make your own charcuterie at home. And I think people really have no idea. So, again, our guest is Michael Rollman. We'll be talking with him more in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25. You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term, good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Michael Rollman, a prolific author whose most recent book, Charcuterie, The Craft of Salting, Smoking, and Curing, is a bit of a cookbook, a bit of a history of charcuterie, and just a great read, even if you're not going to make stuff.
I want to say, Michael, one of the things that I like about this book, and is kind of seems like it's almost part of a new genre of books, in that, you know, you're not just teaching us how to make these things, but you're telling us a little bit about the history of why we do it and how it all came about.
I am doing that, and it's part of the enjoyment of cooking. It's having a sense of the history, having a sense of the reasons we did this. One of the great things about cooking and why I think more and more people are doing it and fascinated by it is because it connects us to humanity, to our own humanity, to being with each other, to serving other people, our family and friends. That's an important part of just being alive.
And traditions,
Sure.
Well, I think that people are trying to reclaim a legacy because, you know, it used to be that, you know, it passed on from generation to generation, usually from mother to daughter, but men knew how to cook as well in certain things. But many of us, especially in America, have become divorced from, we don't know what our grandmother's recipes were. And so I think there's this renewed interest as people, you know, hit 30 years old and realize that they don't know how to cook or they don't know anything about food or why they do what they do or where it comes from. And so when we read about someone who hangs prosciutto by the cycles of the moon or all these intricate things that go on, it connects you to a tradition. I mean, is that part of what you think your books, the need that your books fulfill?
Certainly that's part of it. I mean, there are many needs to fulfill, but tradition is certainly one of them. We're not cooking in a vacuum. Everything that we cook comes from somewhere before us, that came before us, and we connect with the past by cooking every day. And that's an important pleasure of cooking that we don't get from other things. We don't get from surfing the internet or doing our daily jobs.
Right, right.
Cooking connects us to the things that are most important, and charcuterie, because it takes so long, connects us for a long time.
Yeah. And it also lasts for a long time.
And it lasts for a long
time.
Well,
and charcuterie is, you can give some of these dry sausages as gifts. Again, they're stable at room temperature, which Americans want to refrigerate everything, and that's not always the best idea and certainly not the best way to enjoy a lot of this stuff.
And the thing about
food is that we share it with each other. And, I mean, these are... These are some amazing recipes, and when we come back, will you stay with us after the news? I want you to describe the process of how we make some of these intricate things that take so long. Will you do that for us?
Will do.
Super. The guest is Michael Rollman. The book is called Charcuterie, the Craft of Salting, Smoking, and Curing. You can find out about it more on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Happens all the time.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Michael Rollman. Michael has written for the New York Times and the LA Times, Gourmet, Food Arts, and he has books on many subjects, and several of them are on food. His new book is Charcuterie, the Craft of Salting, Smoking, and Curing. It's been called one of the most intriguing and important cookbooks to be published this year. It's a neglected subject and a dying art, at least at home. And he joins us here. You can find out about this book and figure out how to buy this book by going to our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Michael, you wrote a book that is the antithesis of where most books are going. You know, great meals in 20 minutes, great meals in 10 minutes. This is like great meals.
Freezer to oven, here you go.
Right, this is like get some raw meat and take several days to make sausage.
go find a live hog.
Right. Get your knife out and butcher it.
But at the same time, the beauty of these things is you spend a lot of time in preparation, and then you have a country pate that you can eat for a week.
Unless Mark comes over and it's gone in a day.
You know, for all the talk about how hard it is, some of it is not hard at all. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, there are some really involved stuff if you love the craft of cooking, and that's one of the things that is important to me. And I write about what I love and what I care about, so I wrote about these high craft issues.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also you can make your own bacon with just some salt and some seasoning.
Mm-hmm. How do you make your own bacon?
You make your own bacon by going to your butcher or the grocery store and ordering a 5-pound piece of pork belly.
Uh-huh.
And then you take it and you bring it home and you put three tablespoons of salt on it, some garlic, some peppercorns, some thyme, some brown sugar, and refrigerate it for a week. And then you roast it to a temperature of 150 and then cool it. You've got bacon ready to slice and fry or cut up into lardons. And it's the most amazing bacon you've ever had because our bacon at the stores is crap.
Yeah, yes. You know, it's totally true. And I'll tell you, if you want to take that one step further, you can go to heritagefoodsusa.com, which sells heritage breeds of pork from around the country. Mm-hmm. And one of the now they're very expensive, right? Because it's more expensive to grow pork that way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go and you want to buy the tertiary cuts, you know, there's the A cuts and the B cuts, and then like the pork belly is not the prime cut that everyone wants to buy. It's very inexpensive to get the best pork belly in the world. And then make bacon yourself. And
right, for $5 or $6 a pound, you can make the best bacon in the world.
And you can use that so many ways. I mean, just with your eggs in the morning. Or also, you know, put it on your hamburger. And it's really amazing. And Heritage Foods USA is also on our website, along with Michael's book. Talk to me about lard.
Oh, lard is an extraordinary fat.
What is lard? How do we get lard at home? What role should it play in our cooking? Where did it go?
You can often find lard in farmers' markets. You can make your own lard simply by rendering pork fat.
Mm-hmm. Define that.
Which is what lard is. To render pork fat, it's just heated until it melts. And you don't want to heat pork fat till it roasts, till it takes on a golden brown roasted flavor or color or aroma. You want it sort of gently just rendered out, just melted out, and then strained, and you've got this beautiful, silky pork fat, which is what we used to use for cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to use it for our pastries. That's why our pastries were so delicious and flavorful.
I think the key word that you used there was melted, too, because what happens is a lot of people will overcook.
They'll burn it.
They'll burn that fat coming out. And the key there is you want to get it just to a temperature that it melts and turns to a liquid.
If it starts looking brown, then it's gone a little bit too far. It's still good, but it'll have a roasted flavor, and you don't necessarily want that. You want the whiter, the better.
You don't want the roasted bacon flavor in your cookies.
So now this white fat, this lard, is it shelf-stable? Do we refrigerate it? How do we deal with it?
Well, it'll last for a long time in the refrigerator, and wrapped in foil or some light-proof device will keep for ages in your freezer. But it can sit out for, it's like butter. It can sit out for a long time at room temperature, and it's not going to hurt you. It'll pick up some aromas.
And if you've never used lard in cooking and you eat pork in your diet, it is really amazing. And lard was replaced by Crisco in a concerted advertising campaign. And because people thought, well, because Crisco is from vegetables, it's got to be better for you than lard. And a lot of studies that are coming out today are saying that lard is better for you, and it tastes better. It's like the secret ingredient in so many things.
It is by far. And there are some people, some writers and scientists who suggest that it actually increases the good cholesterol in your body. Mm-hmm. And it makes more sense, certainly, than eating hydrogenated vegetable oils, which is the trans fats that are the most harmful of all.
Right now we're all moving away from the Criscos and the trans fats and the things that we're realizing we did more damage. One of the things you just mentioned was that lard really picks up aromas very easily, and same thing with butter. And I just want to make people aware those are things that you should keep covered in your refrigerator. And one of the reasons that you kind of want to rotate the food out of your refrigerator fairly frequently is because things like that will really attract the flavors that are around them.
That's true. It's not a matter of healthiness. It's a matter of flavor, of taste.
Now, the charcuterie that we're talking about making, let's specifically talk about dry-cured ham, because a lot of people in our listening audience may not understand the difference between a cooked ham and a dry-cured ham charcuterie. Talk to us of ham, please, ham expert.
The dry-cured ham, which is probably the pinnacle of European charcuterie, especially you mentioned the Iberico hams, these are simply hams that are salted for many days, even weeks, and then hung to dry.
Mm-hmm.
They never go above room temperature. They're raw, in fact. They're cooked only by salt and by drying. Then they're sliced very thin and eaten as is, and it's got a wonderful, funky flavor to it. It's a, it's that beautiful raw ham flavor, like prosciutto.
Mm-hmm.
The cooked hams, like which we, our holiday hams here in America, are also typically cured, but we roast them and serve them hot. All hams that have a hammy flavor have been cured in some way. If you don't want that cured flavor, you can still roast a fresh
ham.
Leg of ham, but it'll taste like pork shoulder. It'll taste porky. It'll taste like the pulled pork that you use in barbecue.
Yeah, my mom used to do that for us a lot. Cook the fresh hams, and they were great as well.
They're delicious,
but totally absolutely different.
They're totally different, but they're marvels themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Can you take a ham, Michael, and would you teach people how to take a ham and cure it themselves if they buy the pork and to make a ham themselves?
It's in the book.
That's great. Now, what's the difference between, like, let's say the hams that we're buying at the grocery store and they're slicing for us for our deli meat and a bruschetta di Parma? What's the difference in the process there?
Well, first of all, the difference is when we're getting that stuff in the United States, it comes from a factory hog that's been traumatized just before slaughter and not raised very well, and has been tried, has been breeded to.
And food that if you looked at, you would be disgusted.
Yeah, we're really debasing this great, great animal, and it's a shame, and I hope more people realize it and speak out against it, because we need to raise hog the way heritage is raising it. We need to raise them out of doors. It's important not only to the pig, but to our own health. We'll be healthier if we treat our pigs better.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that Michael had started to say a second ago was the other thing, we're putting other things into those hams. It's not pure ham.
We're putting all kinds of crap in them.
We're putting it, and if you put it into the pig, you're putting it into the ham.
Yeah,
you know,
not just into the pig. I'm talking about
into
even
the ham
after
as well.
That.
Hey, I just want to make one plug. We mentioned a Jamón Ibérico, which is widely considered to be the finest ham in the world, which actually has a lot of omega-3s and the good kind of fat because of the type of pig they use. It's never before been available in the country, but they just certified one plant to make it in Spain, and it takes 2 years to make a jamón ibérico, and so they're currently being made, waiting for them to be done to come to the United States. You can get one. They're quite expensive, but if you go to a place called latienda.com, you can put a deposit on a jamón ibérico. It's $1,000 for a ham, $200 down, but it's going to be the best ham in the world if you're a real ham nut like Mark and I. We each have one on the way. We'll invite you over to have a sandwich later. Our guest today is Michael Rollman. His book is Charcuterie, the Craft of Salting, Smoking, and Curing, and I promise you he will tell us how to make something after the break. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys. Our guest today is Michael Rollman. His new book, Charcuterie, the Craft of Salting, Smoking, and Curing, is extraordinary. We recommend it. You can find it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Michael, can you share with us, are you there?
I am.
Sorry, I lost you there for a moment. Can you share with us one of the, you know, we talked about just being able to make bacon, and there are great recipes in your book for how to make sausage that are not that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some involved recipes in your book. Can you give us one of those, like, mucky, messy, two-day recipes? Well, like, what could, if someone really wanted a challenge, take the weekend off and cook from your book, what would they do?
Well, the tough ones are the dry cured sausages. That's the kind of sausage that even experienced chefs have difficulty with.
Mm-hmm.
But even charcutiers in France that I spoke with drive them absolutely crazy.
Well, I'll tell you, every once in a while we make some and throw them all away.
Yeah,
it's just part the way it is.
It's part of the bargain. You enter into this knowing that you could fail.
Well,
but
when you
succeed,
fail,
the glory is great.
But when you fail, you have something that you need to know what you're doing enough to make sure that you don't make somebody sick.
That you do, and a lot of it is common sense and using and following directions, especially with nitrites,
right?
And nitrates, very important part of curing, because botulism can grow in the interior of a sausage at room temperature, and botulism is one of the most poisonous substances on earth.
So how do we prevent botulism at room temperature?
We prevent it by adding a sodium nitrite or sodium nitrate.
And is that historical? Has that always been how botulism was prevented in dry sausages?
Yes, it used to be through saltpeter, which is potassium nitrate. Now we have a much more stable, much more regulated product called sodium nitrite and sodium nitrate.
Now, if someone wants to go make these sausages, why don't you give us an idea of how involved the process is?
It's not, you know, when I get down to, when you think about it, it's not really that hard. I mean, a pâté is just a meatloaf, a sort of a fancy form of meatloaf. A sausage, you have to grind the meat. You have to mix it. You have to put it into a sausage stuffer, and you got to soak the casing. So sausage making is a project, absolutely. And making a dry cured sausage like a salami, it takes that process one step further. You'd grind the meat, you'd mix it with the fat and its interior garnish if you had any. You would let it sit out for a while or refrigerate it for a couple of days to let it ferment. You've actually got a live culture in there, so that it's actually the lactic bacteria are creating an acid, which helps keep it safe and also gives it a lovely tangy flavor.
Fascinating.
Then you stuff it, and then you hang it. You tend it carefully and pray to the gods of charcuterie. And hold your cross up at the evil mold, and hope that it dries properly.
Well, it's funny you talk about the evil molds. We're all praying for the glorious white mold.
Yes.
And holding our crosses up in hopes that the horrible green and black molds don't appear.
They happen, and they're frustrating. But you know, you wipe them off. You wipe them off with the brine, just like cheesemakers can wipe off their cheeses. And that works as well. Just keep an eye on it because they can't actually dig through the casing, and that's when molds can actually be harmful.
All right. My brother-in-law shot a deer on Saturday. What are we doing with all the non-ribs and tenderloins and things like that?
I hope you're making some venison sausage.
Well, how are we doing it?
Or you can make a venison tureen. What you're doing is you're going to take about 3.5 pounds of lean venison meat, and you're going to mix it with whatever fat you've taken off the animal, as well as some delicious pig fat, and grind it. And you're going to put some sweet spices, maybe some allspice and some garlic and some black pepper. And you're going to grind the fat and the meat, and you're going to mix it and stuff it into casings. And then you're going to put it on a grill or roast it in the oven. And it's going to be absolutely fantastic.
Now, how long will something like that be good after we make it?
You want to eat a fresh sausage like that, pretty soon, refrigerated for a week, or they'll freeze, wrapped well. Wrap them in foil and freeze them because fat actually is deteriorated by light. Otherwise, fat freezes very well, so they freeze beautifully and will keep frozen well wrapped for a long time. Or you can make a venison tureen. Use the book and do that venison tureen in there. It's like a basic big sausage, gently baked in a tureen mold in a water bath.
I find that the dry sausages, though, and sort of the long keeping cured stuff that you can make in this book. If you're a hunter, or if you're into cooking and you want to try something new, this stuff is like a days long loving project. It's a hobby. I mean, it's a separate hobby to make dry cured sausages like this. And I know people that are into it, and they're proud of it. Like, they'll give you one as a present at Christmas time, and you're thrilled to receive it. You know, if you like great, and the way that you really can, it is expressive, because when people make these things in an artisanal way, you know, the grind is either thicker or coarser or thinner, depending on how you like it, and the internal garnishes inside the cured sausages can be very interesting, and you really get to put your own mark on these.
There's nothing like a homemade supersod. There's nothing like it.
Do you find there's a lot of room for individual creativity when making these things?
Oh my God, yeah, it's a craft, and everybody's personality will result in a different end result. That's part of the fun of it. That's part of the fascination with it. Part of the value of it is the time. If you don't like to cook, don't do this stuff.
Right, exactly.
You know, go buy it and enjoy it that way. That's fine, too.
Well, whether you want to cook it yourself or you just want to understand how the great cured meats of the world get here, Charcuterie, The Craft of Salting, Smoking, and Curing by Michael Roman is an amazing read, and you can find out how to get it on our website. We'll be talking more with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Shadis, stage left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Michael Roman, author of Charcuterie, The Craft of Salting, Smoking, and Curing. You know, I think one of the interesting things about the book, Michael, is that you explain the whys and wherefores of why things are done. And I think that a lot of people that come from a tradition of making dried sausage and dried hams that are sort of, they're passed down by tradition. I'll always remember I went into a steakhouse that I won't name, and they made their own prosciutto there. They cured their own dried hams. They called it prosciutto. And I was talking to the owner who was behind the bar, and I said, so you still make your own prosciutto, and how do you hang it? How do you know how long to hang it? He's like, my grandfather taught me. We hang it by the cycles of the moon. I'm like, well, where do you hang it? In this restaurant, it's very small. He's like, we hang it in the boiler room downstairs. I'm like, the health inspector lets you do that? He said, no, the health inspector's not allowed in the boiler room. How dangerous is this stuff? I mean, if just people are careful, they don't have to worry that they're going to make anybody sick, right?
No, this has been done for centuries. As long as if you're curing sausage, you have to have some form of nitrite or nitrate in the sausage. If you're curing a ham, there's really nothing you need to be worried about except colored molds. And use your common sense. You're not going to eat green fuzzy mold. It looks awful. If your sausage isn't cured right, if it's raw and mushy in the middle, it's going to be unappealing. So use your common sense. If you use your common sense and follow the instructions, you're not going to hurt yourself.
That's great. Thank you so much, Michael, for being with us today.
Pleasure to have this conversation, guys.
It was super. We'll send a lot of people to
We'll talk
your site.
To you when your next book comes out in May.
Exactly.
Okay, excellent.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
That was Michael Rollman. His book, The Craft of Salting, Smoking, and Curing Charcuterie, is listed on our website, and I think it's one of the most interesting books to come out as a cookbook.
You know, he gave us a quick little tidbit in there. You need very little equipment to do this. If you already have a KitchenAid mixer, there's a grinder attachment that comes with it. Not with it, but for about $30 more, you can buy the grinder attachment. You can take care of a lot of what he's talking about doing in this book. You can do with just that simple grinder attachment on your KitchenAid. Remember to keep that cold right before you're using it. And actually, we even drop a little bit of ice cubes into the mix.
But the book is fun, and this is a great hobby. If you're a cook and you want to, find a new sort of hobby, and this is something that you can share with people, give his presents, bring around, and become known as the charcuterie expert among your friends. Hope you've enjoyed the hour. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.